So we're going to move on to the next case, which is another case from Dr. Reeves. And this is a 42-year-old premenopausal woman. And 2 years ago, she had a 3-centimeter ER-positive, HER2-positive, infiltrating ductal carcinoma, 3 positive nodes. And at that time, it was before the trial data had been reported, and this woman actually was offered participation in one of the randomized trials looking at trastuzumab. She turned that down and received dose-dense AC paclitaxel, followed by tamoxifen and gasarolin. And we'll hear from Dr. Reeves how she presented then 2 years later.
After approximately 2 years, she began to experience bone pain, and she subsequently was diagnosed with a bony metastasis. Her bony mets were in the axioskeleton. There was no disease in the femurs. It was mainly ribs and, I believe, a vertebral body.
What about her performance status and symptoms?
Boy, she was in excellent physical condition. She was active. She was an athlete as well as working full-time.
Okay. What systemic strategy would you utilize in this woman with first-line metastatic disease, as you heard described, HER2-positive, ER-positive? What's the overall strategy you would recommend? Joe?
Well, the answer is obvious. I would do a bone marrow aspiration to confirm the diagnosis of multiple myeloma and treat the patient with Rev-Dex. But I think I agree with Cliff's point entirely, and I think it's appropriate to start at that point because, in general, I would prefer to document a recurrence of disease histologically, but this is one of those situations where it may not be feasible, and you may need to proceed based on the clinical evidence you have supported by tumor markers and other data supporting the absence of other possibilities, such as multiple myeloma, although this patient is young for that. So I think it would be appropriate to sort of dissect some of the key questions here and try and address them individually, because there are some complexities in terms of how to approach this patient. And one is there an advantage for initial chemotherapy or chemohormonal therapy versus hormonal therapy for metastatic disease? And certainly in terms of the limited number of randomized trials, there are higher response rates, better progression-free survival, but more toxicity and no survival advantage. So hormonal therapy would generally be preferable, especially for patients who have few to moderate symptoms and have low to moderate tumor burden. Let's make this case a little bit more challenging and say this is a patient who was premenopausal and relapsed while not receiving hormonal therapy. And so the question is, what would be the optimal hormonal therapy regimen for initial management of metastatic disease? AIs in general are more effective than TAM in postmenopausal women. And phase 2 studies have demonstrated that in premenopausal women indicate that ovarian suppression plus AIs are effective. So a reasonable conclusion would be that continued ovarian suppression plus an AI would be a reasonable strategy. Of course, the other issue is the Faslodex versus the AI, and there are data from the EFFECT trial indicating that those are comparable with regard to activity. And given the fact that we have evidence demonstrating that about a third of patients who fail a non-steroidal AI will respond to Faslodex, but we don't have information regarding the converse sequence, it makes sense to use the strategy of the AI first, followed by fulvestrant. Another question is HER2-positive disease less responsive to hormonal therapy? And we do know that response to hormonal therapy is correlated with hormone receptor expression in both early and late-stage disease. Data has been published by the Slaman-Pegram group shows that hormone expression is quantitatively less in HER2-positive disease. And this observation may be explained by the lower degree of hormone receptor expression or other factors. So the next question is there an advantage for adding trastuzumab to first-line systemic therapy, whether it be chemotherapy or hormonal therapy? And clearly, there is an improvement in objective response with the addition of trastuzumab to first-line chemotherapy in 2 randomized trials, and also in the TANDEM trial that was presented by Dr. Mackey. And in fact, the treatment effect is even more striking in hormonal therapy, but that may be to the relative lower degree of efficacy for hormonal therapy alone with regard to response in this circumstance. If one looks at time to progression, one sees comparable benefits with regard to the addition of trastuzumab to either chemotherapy or anastrozole with a hazard ratio of about 0.5 on the far right. But with regard to overall survival, there's been clear survival benefits demonstrated for the addition of trastuzumab to chemotherapy, where that doesn't appear to be the case, or at least there's no evidence to suggest that for the anastrozole, for the TANDEM trial. And it boils down to, is the benefit of trastuzumab combined with first-line chemotherapy lost if preceded by endocrine therapy combined with trastuzumab? And this question really can't be answered from the valuable information that we have at this time. So my suggestion would be to certainly continue ovarian suppression with an aromatase inhibitor, I think it's important to pay attention to details regarding suppression, and this is more important if you're initially starting suppression, and to assure continuous function suppression with monthly injections or oophorectomy. I would favor reserving trastuzumab for disease progression and when chemotherapy is clinically indicated. I think initiating anti-reabsorptive therapy would be appropriate for a symptomatic patient. And I would also pay some attention to the patient's symptoms with regard to imaging sites of concern, including the spine, obviously, if the patient has back pain or if there's pain in any weight-bearing bones. And if you're initially starting a patient with an LHRH analog, you need to keep an eye on the LHRH-induced E2 surge and potential tumor flare.
I want to ask Joyce to comment a little bit on the management of patients with ER-positive, HER2-positive disease. What would you do in this situation?
I would generally recommend an oophorectomy to her with an AI. It's tricky in these premenopausal women to be sure you've got enough suppression of the ovaries to be sure that the AIs are working optimally. We don't have as much data on that as we would like yet. So I tend to favor oophorectomy in this situation to kind of optimize her endocrine therapy at this point with a IV bisphosphonate, and probably wouldn't expect her to get a hugely prolonged clinical benefit from it, but she's asymptomatic now, and so that's hard to improve upon. So I would favor aggressive endocrine therapy for her, and I would wait until she progressed on that, and then I would probably go on to chemotherapy and trastuzumab.
Which agent or agents?
I pretty much always start with vinorelbine and trastuzumab because I think the efficacy is phenomenal and there's no alopecia. And I find women feel quite well, generally speaking. There are a few women who take a while to adjust to the vinorelbine, but I have about four patients out many, many, many years having been on vinorelbine and trastuzumab for a few years, now just on trastuzumab.
Tom, how do you think through this situation? First line, ER positive, HER2 positive.
Well, actually, I agree with Joe that these data are interesting, but they don't tell us that we have to give combination hormonal therapy and trastuzumab. I think it's an acceptable option, but looking at the combination, it looked a lot like single-agent trastuzumab to me, and there are 15-20% of patients who got hormonal therapy alone who went a year without progressing, and those patients were well served. So in the absence of a survival benefit, it's kind of a single-agent versus combination issue, so that I will often start with hormonal therapy. I generally use chemotherapy with trastuzumab rather than single agent trastuzumab because of the documented survival advantage, and because also, as opposed to chemotherapy without trastuzumab, you can stop the chemotherapy and continue the trastuzumab, so that is an essential difference.
Can we see what happened with the patient?
We treated the painful area with radiation therapy. After that was completed, we treated systemically with Abraxane and Herceptin. She was able to take the Abraxane for about 6 months before neuropathy intervened, but all of her symptoms, otherwise painful-wise and constitutional symptoms, had completely resolved. We discontinued the Abraxane, and she was maintained with Herceptin and a hormonal maneuver, the Zoladex, at that time.
George, what do you think about the concept of, you know, we have a survival benefit that we've seen with chemotherapy, trastuzumab? John Mackey last year, after he presented the Tandem data, was kind of promoting that a little bit. What are your thoughts about these types of situations?
When you have a randomized controlled trial that shows an overall survival advantage for an intervention, when I'm sitting down and talking to a patient, while my patients certainly value quality of life and want to get the least toxic therapy possible, most of them also want to live longer. And we actually do have randomized controlled trial data from two trials suggesting that the combination of chemotherapy and trastuzumab gives you a survival benefit. So I personally would have offered this patient chemotherapy plus trastuzumab as my initial therapy. And I probably would have treated the patient up to a point of some toxicity break related to the chemotherapy and then maintained the patient on trastuzumab and hormonal therapy. I look at the Tandem data and perhaps get some different feeling out of it than others do. I look at that data and say that if you have a ER-positive, HER2-positive breast cancer, you have a HER2-positive breast cancer. And as far as I can tell, HER2 is the major driver of growth in those cancers. And as in this patient who relapsed within 2 years on hormonal therapy, having had aggressive chemotherapy, the estrogen receptor is probably not the major driver in this cancer.
George, specifically, which chemo agent or agents do you think you'd be likely to use with trastuzumab?
Given that this patient relapsed a couple of years out, I would have felt very comfortable giving a taxane-based regimen. I don't feel strongly about which one.